Hello and welcome to the First and Ten podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Feltz, here in Indianapolis, Indiana, recording a special rivalry week edition of the First and Ten. Really big week in the Big Ten. A lot to be decided, a lot to play for in both divisions. Huge. It doesn't get any bigger than this. The final regular season episode of the First and Ten this year, final regular season preview. It's a Friday night edition. We've already got one Big Ten game under our belts, and we'll open our show by talking about that here in a minute. But first, here to break it all down with me, as always, in Columbus, Ohio, it's Reed Murray. Reed, what's going on?
Hey, Pat. I'm in Columbus on the scene for the game. It's, it's a unique opportunity to be able to witness this game in person. It's something that I don't take for granted. And, it's really an exciting week in this city and in this state with this massive event being just a few short hours away. So, not much to say. It's an event that does not need much hyping up, because it hypes itself up. It speaks for itself, and I'm excited to be here for it.
You know, we can say that we're recording this episode a little bit later than usual because of the scheduling mess that was created by Thanksgiving and travel and the World Cup and all this other fun stuff we've got going on in this very busy week of the year. But I'm going to choose to say that we postponed it a little bit to get the raw emotion from Reed Murray with just a little over 12 hours until kickoff between Ohio State and Michigan at noon in Columbus this Saturday. I think we're getting really as real as it gets here, coming close to maybe the biggest game in the history of this series, at least one of the biggest games in the history of this series. Ohio State 11-0, Michigan 11-0. A lot of people saw that coming in the beginning of the season. I was one of them. And we're all going to find out how it ends tomorrow. But Reed, let's talk about what happened today in the Big Ten, because a little after the United States finished its 0-0 draw with England, greatest draw against the British since the last one in 2010, and since then it was Bunker Hill. A little after that, Nebraska and Iowa played a game of football in Iowa City. It's the Heroes Trophy, a rivalry that we have talked about as not a rivalry on this show before, because not only has Iowa dominated it, but also it's a fake trophy. And it was just kind of created out of thin air when Nebraska joined the conference about a decade ago. So they played it today, though, Reed. We didn't get a chance to preview it, but we can kind of recap it. And weirdly, I think that makes our Big Ten West content later in the show all the more important and all the more worthwhile to talk about. And that's my first thing to watch for, Reed, as we get into our what to watch for here and talk about Iowa and Nebraska, is the Iowa choke job sets up a massive opportunity for Purdue. So what I'm saying to watch for is spoiler makers in the Big Ten title, spoiler makers spoiling the Big Ten West. How many times can they say spoil in one segment? Iowa absolutely choked in this game. Reed, they're down 17-0 at halftime. Alex Padilla, starting quarterback. He comes into the game for Spencer Petras, and he played okay, threw an interception to close out the game. But Reed, there shouldn't have been a reality where Iowa had to throw the ball nearly 40 times in a game. But that was the reality, because they were trailing the whole time. And this is the best Nebraska's looked in a while. Reed, I think this is for two reasons. This is really interesting. Number one, takes Iowa out of contention for the Big Ten West, assuming one of Purdue or Illinois take care of business. And also, there were a lot of rumors today about the next head coach of Nebraska being Matt Rhule. And I kind of want to address both of those before we talk about what Purdue has on the line tomorrow, and for that matter, what Illinois has on the line. But Reed, what did you see from Iowa and Nebraska?
Well, I was really astonished that Nebraska had this big of a lead. It was, what right. was it? I know it was 17. I believe it was 24-0 at one point.
I think it was 17-0
Nebraska. Yeah. But regardless, the fact that Nebraska was up by three possessions against Iowa, that's something.
And it was a furious comeback by Iowa too. They really almost,
and then in true Nebraska fashion, they nearly gave it away. And we were sitting, I was at Roosters with my brother and my dad, and we were both sitting there thinking, look, Nebraska's gonna give this away. We've seen them do it not only just in general before, but against Iowa many times before. Mm-hmm. And we totally thought it was going to happen, and it didn't, as hard as Nebraska tried to give it away late in the game. There were multiple serious chances to give the game away for Nebraska, and they hung on by the hair on their chinny chin chin. But this game just epitomizes the Big Ten West this season. It's a game of hot potato. Nobody wants to hang on to this Big Ten West title. They're just passing it around. And every time a team has a golden opportunity, you have a chance to beat a 3-8 team and go to Indianapolis. You're not going to take it. And now Purdue has the chance to beat a, 4-7 team. And we'll see how badly they want to take it. And if they don't, then Illinois has a chance to beat, what is Northwestern, 1-10?
That's it.
A
winless.
A 1-10 team. America. We'll see if they take that chance.
Who wants it less? The 2022 Big Ten West.
That is what this conference comes down, what this division comes down to. And do, off the top of your head, do you know if Purdue and Illinois both lose, do Iowa Wisconsin wins. Or Minnesota have a chance, or is it Iowa?
No, it's Iowa only.
Okay, fascinating.
So Iowa is hoping for losses by the Illini and the Boilers tomorrow. Reed, but the Iowa Hawkeyes themselves lost this game, and really, I didn't see this coming. We didn't obviously get to do predictions for it. But I would have predicted Iowa. You would have predicted Iowa. Everybody in their right mind would have predicted Iowa, because usually in this scenario, when Iowa has to take care of business against a team that they should clean up against, they do it. Iowa doesn't lose a lot of games in stupid fashion to bad teams, but they lost this one stupidly to a bad team, and they almost made up for it at the end. There's a questionable call, no call on a catch late in the game. Padilla actually threw a pretty great pass. And it looked like Iowa's receiver. They called him inbounds first. Then they say he gained possession out of bounds, incomplete. They had a 4th and 10, missed it. They get the ball back, though, and then a pick on 4th down seals Iowa's fate with a loss there. But, Reed, Nebraska showed a lot of fight in this game, and under Mickey Joseph, they did show some fight, and I think they were better than they were under Scott Frost. Still obviously not enough to get the Huskers any better than 4-8, and really it's miraculous that they weren't 3-9 again. And hey, I don't know if I'd call them the best 4-8 team in the country, but they were a pretty okay 4-8 team, all things considered. Certainly the best 3-9 team in the country last year. That's a record, and certainly one I don't see being topped anytime soon. But Reed, the 2023 Huskers might have a different face on the sideline. A lot of reports right now saying that Matt Rhule, the former head coach of the Baylor Bears and Carolina Panthers in the NFL, could be the next head coach of Nebraska. Apparently they're still working out the details. Nothing is official yet. But that is the way the winds are blowing. Reed, I think this would be a home run hire for Nebraska. How do you feel about it?
I completely agree. I mean, you see what Matt Rhule did at Baylor. He took a team in 3 seasons from 1-11 in his first season. Then in his third season, they were 11-3. I forget whether or not they won the Big 12, but they went to the Sugar Bowl that year. Lost to, I want to say, Georgia. But regardless, they ended up losing the Big 12 championship to Oklahoma that season, I remember. But yes. Anyway. 1-11 in his first year, 11-3 in his final season. That's about as good as it gets. They finished the regular season 11-1, so complete 180 for the Baylor Bears in 3 seasons. So if there's anyone who can kind of take a program from the ashes and make them rise again, especially as the Big Ten is about to get even more difficult in 2 seasons, I think Matt Rhule is one of the top guys you could hire. And, you know, after sort of failing the NFL, I think it's honestly the perfect timing for him coming back to college football. There's not really much of a fear, I think, of losing him to an NFL team in the future. I think the only real concern is that just with him being a bigger name, if things do fail, as things have failed, because, I mean, Scott Frost, he seemed like a home run hire when Nebraska first hired him, and it didn't work out. So if he does fail, Matt Rhule, being a bigger name, he's probably going to have a lot of money tied to that deal, and that could be a problem for Nebraska. But really, any coach is going to bring Nebraska back up, there's going to be a monetary risk involved. He's going to cost a lot of money. So I say go big or go home. This is about as big as you can go. And I love this hire for the Huskers.
Yeah. Speaking of money with Matt Rhule, the Carolina Panthers, who fired him earlier in the season, still owe him $34 million. So I don't know how much money
he's
even going to need from Nebraska, because the Panthers, I'm going to guess, for a number of years are going to be chipping away at that buyout. Although David Tepper is one of the richest people on the planet, he could probably pay it with the money in his back pocket in between his couch cushions if he felt like it. But that's a different issue. I don't know how much they're going to have to pay him, but still a lot, because he's an in-demand coach in the college game at the very least. And Reed, I know there are going to be some people out there who think he failed in the NFL. That means he's a failure of a coach. He's not a good coach. I almost feel like Captain Obvious pointing this out, but NFL and college football might as well be two completely different sports, because the skill set it takes to succeed in one does not necessarily translate to the other. We've seen guys who have had success in the NFL fail in college and vice versa, especially on the college NFL side. Urban Meyer was a terrible NFL coach, one of the worst we've ever seen. That's the most obvious example, I think, but there have been a number over the years. Nick Saban was terrible with the Dolphins, you know, et cetera. Matt Rhule was a great college coach, awful NFL coach. I think he comes back to college, he'd be great, particularly in this Big Ten West, at least in year one. I think there's a good chance that this Nebraska team could be looking at 6 wins. I could see him working the transfer portal a little bit. Guys would want to play for him. I mean, he's proven to be a winning coach before, and I think he'd be a great fit at Nebraska. Should this happen, really, there would be no excuse for it not to work. And I think I said that with Scott Frost as well. Like, there's no excuse. Nebraska's got to get it right this time. Now or never. But this really feels like now or never, because he feels like a perfect coach at a perfect time. I thought he could be a candidate. Should have, you know, there were always a lot of rumors about James Franklin leaving Penn State for USC or somewhere else. I thought, should that have happened, Matt Rhule, who I believe is a Penn State guy, would have been a great guy for Penn State to go after. But that didn't end up happening. And I don't think it will happen, all things considered. I never thought James Franklin was truly going to leave Penn State, although it was rumored. I thought, okay, well, if he leaves, just bring in Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule, Nebraska, I think makes perfect sense. I love this move. And I think this could be the move that puts Nebraska back on the map, at least, you know, putting them in a bowl game, which has been a long time since they've been to one of those. I think at the very least should be the expectation in 2023. But Reed, talking about the now and the thing I actually have to watch for and the reason we got into this segment in the first place. The Purdue Boilermakers now, with this Iowa loss, have a chance winning in, go to the Big Ten title game. If they beat the Indiana Hoosiers tomorrow at Bloomington, a game I will be in attendance for, they're in. This is Purdue with stakes. And I think to those of you who are outsiders and don't get to deal with not only know Purdue fans, but see the Purdue team in basketball, football, whatever, up close and personal, I think what you have to know about Purdue athletics is that when there are stakes and when there are expectations and when something has to get done, it never gets done. Never. Look at it over the years. I mean, how many different NCAA tournament losses? How many different disappointing games right after a gigantic upset? Purdue without expectations, I will always say, is going to do something. Purdue with expectations, I will always say, is going to disappoint. I don't feel too good about Purdue tomorrow, Reed. However, they control their own fate. They control their destiny. It's all in their hands. When you're in, you're going to Indianapolis. You're going 45 minutes down I-65 to Lucas Oil Stadium, and you're playing the winner of Ohio State, Michigan. Simple as that, Reed. What do you think about Purdue tomorrow?
I agree that things are not going to necessarily go smoothly for them. Now, what the result of that game is going to be, I really couldn't tell you. But, I mean, Purdue has been really up and down this season. And I would say they've been kind of on a downward trend looking at their game against Northwestern last week, but they also look great against Illinois. Or maybe not great, but, you know, they got a result when they really needed against Illinois to put themselves in a much better position to go ahead and win the West than they had been in before. That was a crucial win on the road against a, at the time, ranked team. So Purdue, rather, is probably one of the hardest teams to predict. Really, any game in the Big Ten West this season has been tremendously hard to predict, and any outcome as to who's going to win that division has been hard to predict. Purdue is one of the major culprits there of unpredictability. So it's definitely, that's why we say it's one to watch for, because it's one that's hard to definitively say, you know, an accurate prediction on. This is a tough one. We'll save it for the prediction segment, what I think the score and the outcome of that game is going to be, but I certainly think things will get messy in the West.
Yeah, should be absolutely something worth watching for. And I think it's a whole heck of a lot more likely that Purdue is the team who chokes it and not Illinois. But hey, stranger things have happened, Reed, and I think the hat is probably worth at least keeping half an eyeball on as well in that 3:30. Is that a noon or a 3:30 kick? That is in the 3:30 time slot as well. So the race for the Big Ten West will be decided in the 3:30 time slot, but the race for the Big Ten East will be decided in the noon time slot. Before we get into that, though, Reed, what do you have to watch for this week?
My what to watch for, I'm saying injury reports, because there are quite a few players involved in this Ohio State-Michigan game that are on, or that are, you know, they have eyeballs on them as to whether or not they'll be playing. Blake Corum, biggest one for Michigan. Then on Ohio State side, at that same position, Trayvon Henderson and Mayan Williams have been question marks. Jackson Smith and Jigba, obviously. a big one. And Ohio State seemingly, you know, multiple times throughout the season have had big names pop up on the unavailable list the day of the game that had really had no prior injuries that were known of. And for Ohio State, in addition to injuries that were not known of, Lathan Ransom, broken hand against Maryland, played through it, had a terrific game that included a block punt. Apparently, Tommy Eichenberg was also playing with two broken hands. So really, you never know what the injury status is going to look like for this Ohio State team. And I think on Michigan side, it's the same way in that there's really no way to know whether Blake Corum is going to play until the players are on the field and whether number two is out there or not, because, you know, Michigan smartly is not giving up much information about how he's doing in this week. Jim Knowles at Ohio State said they're just preparing as if he's going to play, which I think is the smart way to go of going about things. So it's going to be a question of whether he's on the field, in addition to whether he's on the field, whether he is at 100%. And I think that also applies to Ohio State's running backs, because I think that when the status report comes out on the day of the game, I think I'm not sure about Jackson Smith and Jigba, but I think all three marquee running backs in this game will all be considered available. Now, whether they will actually play and whether they will be 100%, I don't know. But I think I would be surprised if either team would kind of tip their hand even an hour before the game by saying so-and-so is not going to play. I think even if they're not going to play, they'd still want to keep them guessing, keep them on the sideline in pads. But this is definitely a storyline to be watching, because Michigan, I think, without Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum, is a completely different team and a completely different offense. So that's important to look at. Ohio State, whether the majority of the carries will be in the hands of Dallin Hayden or Trayvon Henderson or Mayan Williams. You know, I think we could be looking at a reality where both Henderson and Williams are available, but Hayden is still getting more carries than the other two after he had a breakout week against Maryland. There's a lot of interesting possibilities here. And honestly, there's a possibility of Jackson Smith and Jigba playing, because going into the Iowa game, I mean, there was talk from reporters about if Jackson Smith and Jigba comes back, and then all of a sudden he's on the field. Ohio State could absolutely be trying to keep an ace up its sleeve, which I think is less likely, but you never know. And that could be another case of he's in pads, he's on the field, but he doesn't play, is maybe a decoy. Not sure, but lots of injury games, lots of guessing to be done leading up to this game. And, you know, some of the players who are really going to make an impact in this one, and some of the really high performance players on each team are question marks. So that's something to keep an eye out on.
You know, it's the last week of the regular season, Reed, and every single knock you take, every bump, every bruise adds up throughout the course of that season. And by this point in the year, it's really rare for a guy to be totally healthy. So everybody's playing a little bit hurt. But when you hear a guy who's on this injury report this late in the season, you get two questions. It's number one, how serious is it? And usually at this point in the season, it's accumulation of things, not so much as it is one big thing. And are they going to play through it or not? And I think in the case of either of Blake Corum or Donovan Edwards, I think both of them, particularly here for Michigan, they've got to play. Because without them, even if they're at 75% strength, without them, Michigan, I think, is screwed. They are toast. But I don't see there's a reality where they're not playing. I just don't. So I don't think we're going to have to worry about that, especially if you're a Michigan fan, worry about it. But definitely something worth keeping an eye on there. Reed, I like the way you're going. All right, quick break, but we will be right back here on the First and 10 to talk all things uniform matchup, Sickos, game of the week, and our score predictions. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Can't do it for three. Back here on the First and 10, ready to get into the rest of our show here this week. All right, Reed, starting off with our uniform matchup of the week. I don't even think it's a question. It's Michigan and Ohio State, the two most beautiful historic uniforms in this conference. They don't change much, but Reed, I know you do have some issues with a lack of striping on the Michigan away jerseys. I agree with you. I saw your post about that and how traditionally Michigan has had stripes on the white uniforms. They don't do that now, and they're pretty plain. I would add that, and I also am of the opinion, like a lot of people, that these teams should both wear their home uniforms. It would be so cool. Reed, I think I hit on everything there, but these uniforms are just so beautiful. This is your time to shine. You wrote a whole story about this. I loved it. You should go read it in the Lantern. Reed, talk about it.
Yeah, in this game, Ohio State will be wearing traditional home uniforms, just your standard silver helmet, scarlet jersey with no special stripes. Some people want the gray stripes that Ohio State tends to wear in the playoff, unless they pull a 180 and completely change their minds tonight. They will be wearing the traditional scarlet jersey with the helmet stripe on the sleeve that we've seen all season, and then traditional gray pants as well. As for what Michigan's wearing, I have no idea. And maybe some news has been out in Michigan circles that I haven't seen, because I'm not quite as plugged in on their side of things as I am at Ohio State's. But my suspicion on what Michigan will wear, I'm going to guess, obviously, classic winged helmet. I don't think they've worn a different helmet than that in decades. Standard white away jersey with no sleeves, just a little bit of striping on the piping. And I think they're going to wear the blue pants. And I say that because, first of all, Michigan has not worn maize pants in Columbus since 2014, which I think is really disappointing. They've worn white the last two times they've played in Columbus. And I got to be honest, I don't know how the Michigan equipment staff operates, but I have a suspicion that they are superstitious, because last season we hadn't seen Michigan wear blue pants in a while. They broke them out against Washington early in the season, had a big win. And then later on in the year, as the season started ticking down, they wore blue pants over and over and over. They ended up wearing them against Maryland, second to last week of the season. I don't know how often they wore it before them, but I know they wore it against Maryland, second to last week, against Ohio State at home. First time they'd worn blue pants against Ohio State in I don't know how long, potentially ever. Then they wore it with white jerseys in the Big Ten Championship, and then with blue jerseys again in the playoff. So Michigan, I think they kind of, they wore the blue pants. They had some success, and I think they stuck with that as a superstition. And I think if Michigan was superstitious, they would wear blue pants against Ohio State, because first of all, they won against Ohio State wearing the blue. Second of all, they haven't had success wearing the white ones in Columbus, and they also haven't won in Columbus since 2000. So wearing maize pants, as they did in all those matchups, would be bad luck as well. I think Michigan will go blue, white, blue. I don't think it'll look good, and I think it's kind of disappointing. I think it looks more like Ohio State, Michigan, when you have scarlet and gray versus maize and blue, as opposed to white and blue or white and white. But on the subject of both teams wearing home uniforms, because this is something, of course, we see it suggested all the time. It's something I still don't know how I feel on, because it's something I pushed for, but I also – there's something about wearing white on the road in a traditional game. I don't know exactly how I feel about it, but I will say that it's not been completely neglected or ignored by the Ohio State equipment staff. Again, not sure what Michigan's thoughts on it are, but I do know that Ohio State Director of Football Equipment Services, Kevin Reese, has thought about it. He has talked with his staff about it, and he said, this is a direct quote from him, "I don't think the discussion's kind of made it outside our room here." But you know, it's something he's aware of. He said they've looked at it,
as reported in the Lantern by Reed Murray.
Yeah. Well, actually this part was not included in the Lantern.
Whoa, this is a first and 10 original. Heard it here first.
First and 10 exclusive. Clip it. He says, "We've looked at it." That's a direct quote from him. And they'll potentially look at a special game like or a special uniform matchup like that for potentially an anniversary or something special to commemorate in the series.
We have an anniversary, of course, coming up, Reed.
Not to my knowledge. I can do some research on that. I thought 100th
anniversary of the shoe could have been a great time to do it.
Well, it's not quite as up to Ohio State as it is to Michigan, as to what Michigan was. And that's the whole thing of it, is that it would have to be a collaborative effort. If Ohio State decides to run alternate against Michigan, that's really just within their own doors. But they have to kind of coordinate that with Nike and Michigan as to if both teams are going to wear home uniforms. So that would be something that's more – takes more time to be in the works. It's, I think, a little bit harder to do spontaneously, and they would also have to get approval from the Big Ten, the NCAA, to have a color-on-color game like that, which I don't think would be a problem because there's no color clash. But anyway, all this to say, the color-on-color is something that Ohio State has thought about. It's not completely alien to them, but they have not really gone very far with thinking about it. It's still very much just a concept. But it is a concept that people are aware of. So there you go.
It's a concept I would be a big fan of. Reed is with me there. You heard it here first. We have first and 10 original reporting. How cool is that, Reed? I love it. So shout out to that. Pretty cool. All right, Sicko's game of the week. Reed, it's got to be Maryland and Rutgers.
No doubt. No diggity.
What? No diggity in the slightest. Not at all. I don't see one single ounce of diggity in this pick here, Reed. It's a tradition unlike any other. The least exciting rivalry in the Big Ten, but a game in the Big Ten. Not really any stakes this year. Maryland's bowl fate is all but sealed. They're going to pick your favorite pinstripe or maybe Music City Bowl.
Yeah, this is, are they going to the pinstripe or the guaranteed rate? Those are the stakes of this game.
Yes, I know. Huge.
Every other game has more stakes than this.
Which baseball state? Which empty baseball stadium will they be playing in? In
both oh boy, seasons? Yeah. Do you have to go to freezing New York or Arizona, which is not freezing? And hopefully for their case, they win and get to go to Arizona where it's warm. Unless they want to go to New York where it's closer to their fans, which is also where they went last year. I don't know anything else to say about this read to you.
Not quite, now.
Let's move on to the fun stuff. Our game of the week this week, how could it be anything else? It's the game. Ohio State and Michigan, the names speak for themselves. Reed, this is the biggest game in the entire country, I think, all season. I can't remember a time where I was more excited for this game. I can't remember a time where there was more on the line in this game. Number two versus number three, I would say this is a playoff play-in. This is a Big Ten championship play-in, certainly. And all things considered, this is the one in this rivalry that I think can cement who is the big dog between these two for the next half decade or so. This feels like it's got that big of a weight to it. And obviously, I think the series is going to kind of go back and forth with who wins and who loses. But in terms of who's got the feel of having control of this rivalry, this feels like an all-important game. And unless they play again in the playoff, which I don't think the committee wants to do, even if they both make it in, I think the committee will try and find a way to keep them from playing each other. There really does feel like that there couldn't be much more on the line here. And beyond all of those sorts of implications, there's also just the implication of it's Ohio State playing Michigan in a game of football. And that is all you need to say for it to matter. Reed, what is there unsaid about this?
Well, I think in terms of stakes, what's in the line here, I think first and foremost, it is a playoff play-in game. And I think it's not a playoff elimination game per se, but absolutely whoever wins this game, you know, even if they go turn
around. The Big Ten can get two teams in. I agree.
Right. Even if the winner of this game goes and loses to Purdue, Illinois, or Iowa, you know, that's a one-loss Big Ten champion with wins over Penn State, one of these two teams, and, you know, potentially other good wins on their resume. That's a playoff team. I'll also say regarding the playoff, no matter what, 100%, I will tell you right now, these two teams will not play each other in a playoff semifinal. Yes. Maybe in the national championship, but there is 100%.
God, that'd be so cool. That would
play each other in a semifinal.
If these two teams played in a national championship game, I think the earth would burn.
Well, it would honestly be disappointing because it would have 40,000 fewer fans than the average game between these two teams.
Yeah.
But
it's in LA. I think that stadium seats like, what, 80K?
Yeah, I thought it was 70,000, and I was maybe even then. Yeah, that's a
fewer,
bad,
yeah,
a bad,
fewer than usual
estimate, maybe. But
a neutral site game between Ohio State and Michigan would be war. That would be war. You would have to have like Argentinian soccer style barricades up between the sections.
It would be cool to have separate, and I know bowl games tend to be kind of separated anyway, but it would be cool to have a true separated crowd like that for a game like that. But anyway, back to the game in Columbus where the crowd will be mostly Ohio State fans. You know, I think what you're saying about the future of the rivalry really is important. And I think it matters. I mean, I don't think any Michigan Ohio State game matters more to one team than the other, but I think in terms of the future and program momentum, there's more on the line for Michigan than there is for Ohio State, because I think with Ohio State's, and this is not to bash Michigan, by the way, with Ohio State's track record of producing NFL talent and going to the playoff and being considered one of the brand, I mean, obviously Michigan's an enormous brand, but Ohio State being one of the teams who is kind of penciled into the playoff every preseason.
For a decade, it's been them, Alabama, and Clemson.
Right. For Ohio State being one of those three teams, I think if Ohio State loses this game or potentially takes a seat back in the rivalry, they will still be able to recruit at the ridiculous level to do it. But I think if Michigan can win this game, I think that really puts them more on even footing with Ohio State. I think Michigan loses more by losing this game in terms of future recruiting and future brand status, because I think Michigan winning this one really proves everything that Michigan will say to you on a recruiting visit of, look, we are just as big of a deal as anybody else. We are just as successful. This would be really the proof in the pudding. And again, that's not to say Michigan can't recruit well without a playoff appearance or without beating Ohio State. They do it. And that's the reason they're the number three team in the country right now is because they've recruited so well and they've produced players very well. But I think Ohio State is always kind of able to do it on another level. And I think Michigan really has a chance to set themselves up for some future success in the recruiting market, transfer market, et cetera. So I think the stakes in this one are pretty big in the future. I think in terms of who is considered top dog, you know, or in talking about the, you know, because I remember you said, I don't know if there's ever been a game with bigger stakes in this one. I would say the 2006 game where it was number one versus number two had bigger stakes because, first of all, that was a big to the national championship on the line. But also, you look at what happened in that game. That was kind of early in the era of Ohio State dominance. Ohio State won that one. And then barring 2011 when, you know, they had just been hit with some sanctions and they had Luke Fickell as an interim coach, they didn't lose again for another, you know, what was it? Almost 15 years. So I think that game, I don't know if this one has quite the impact on the future as that one does, but they're certainly similar in stakes. I would say the stakes of this one are more similar to the one versus two undefeated game of 2006 than they were of the two versus three 2016 game.
Yep.
Because
certainly the biggest game in the series since then.
Right. Yeah. And this game, because in that game,
that's same something,
you know, as similar as two versus, is it, because that was two versus three in 2016. You know, the winner of that game, Ohio State, did not win the Big Ten. They didn't go to the Big Ten championship. Penn State did, and they won it. So this game, you know, and I don't want to say this because I don't want to jinx either side, but I think the winner of this game was comfortably going to be the Big Ten champion. So you have
you don't want to jinx Michigan, really? Reed Murray doesn't want to jinx Michigan. I'm surprised you're even saying Michigan.
Well, we have to be professional on the show. I'm not going to be a
homer. We got to keep it real. We got to keep it real. Yeah.
I may or may not say that word off the air. I don't know, but
you don't. Okay,
that's for. Yeah, but no. Well, here's, you know, the winner of this game is
we're hashtag unbiased. Likely to be the
Big Ten champion. Likely will be the Big Ten champion. Likely will go to the playoff. Has a great chance of going to the national championship. So, yeah, the stakes here. It's not really possible to imagine bigger stakes than what are here. So this one, I think it really, you know, I don't want to say it comes down to who wants it more, right? That's so cliche.
So cliche.
And it's incredibly cliche. And I think it's something I've said on the show before. That's BS. That's stupid. But it's kind of a little bit true in this one. And the reason I say that.
Sometimes cliches are right.
Is because we saw it last week. In the Big House, Michigan's beatable. We saw it last week in Maryland. Ohio State's beatable. We saw it in the Georgia game. Georgia's beatable. Every team in college football is beatable. And most importantly, Ohio State and Michigan are beatable. And we kind of talked in the preseason. I was kind of the frame of mind, especially looking at the way Ohio State's offense performed going into this game last season. But many times throughout last season, that Ohio State's offense is just so good that it doesn't really matter who they're facing. They will find a way to prevail. And Ohio State's offense has been incredible this season. But the Ohio State defense can struggle every now and then. They can hiccup every now and then. You know, Ohio State on offense and defense can run into issues. Maryland, after getting shut out by Penn State, made Ohio State's defense look less than terrific. Ohio State's offense against Maryland, you know, it was good, but it wasn't tremendous. Same thing with Michigan's run offense. I thought early in the season that no matter what Michigan's run offense goes up against, they'll find a way to push through because of what they did against Penn State, terrific defense. And Michigan just said, I don't care. And we're going to go score 42 points and bulldoze our way through. But then they couldn't really muscle through against Illinois. They had to really chip away a win there at home. So I think a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of it that comes down to character and it comes down to coaching and play calling, I think. Really, because I think both teams have such good athletes that it almost cancels out the talent on the field. I think it comes down to who schemes the game better and who wants it more. I think Ohio State, I saw a stat recently that there are only 8 players on the roster for Ohio State who have ever beaten Michigan. And there's only one who recorded a stat in that game. I don't know who that one is, but when was the last time we could say something like that? It's always been, you know, every senior on the Ohio State roster has beaten Michigan 3 times. It's always been things like that. So first of all, I think there's the factor that really pretty much no one on the Ohio State roster has beaten Michigan before. They want that feeling. They know how high the stakes are. They, you know, you come to Ohio State to play in front of crowds like a crowd, you know, 100,000 person riled up crowd. Not to say Michigan won't want it, but I think also, you know, it's always just been, oh, we're going to do it again. Oh, it's, you know, I see JJ McCarthy in Instagram comment sections talking about how we own Ohio State, blah, blah, blah.
I think Ohio State players. That there's nothing JJ McCarthy loves more than running his mouth. I'm going to just tell you that right now.
I think Ohio State players feel it's not necessarily that they're going to want it more. I think they need it more. So I kind of trust Ohio State's game planning and play calling more than Michigan's. So I think Ohio State will prevail in this one. I think it's going to be incredibly close. It's going to be a classic. And, you know, I feel like every time people say before a game, it's going to be a classic, it's going to be a great game, it ends up not being so. But I truly am convinced this one will be a blow for blow showdown. I think both teams will score, you know, I mean, they'll score, right? You know, these are two great offenses. But I don't think it's going to be a Big 12 style shootout. I think it'll be there'll be some good balance in this game. It's not going to be the kind of game like in 2018 where Ohio State explodes and scores 62 points despite any challenges coming in. I think teams will be I think both teams will keep each other in check. I'm saying 38-31 Ohio State. I think no matter what, no matter who wins or anything, I think it'll be a 7 or so point game. I'll call it a one score game. Whether that's a field goal or a touchdown, I'm going to call a touchdown and my predictions. But like I said, I think it comes down to less. I think it's going to be less about the players and the playmakers on the field. Maybe with the exception of Marvin Harrison Jr., because that guy can just make some stupid catches. With, you know, I think it's less about the players and playmakers on the field. It's less about the Heismans like Corum and Stroud. And I think it's more about the teams as cohesive units. And I think Ohio State, if we follow your model of coach quarterback crowd, I think Ohio State takes at least 2 for 3, probably 3 mm-hmm. for three. And
I call it 2.5.
I give Ohio State the win.
I'm giving Ohio State the win as well, Reed. I've got 37-31. I think this is a classic as well. I cannot wait for this one, man. This I feel like a kid on Christmas right now, Reed, just thinking about this one. And as a neutral party in this, I can't wait. I can only imagine what the feeling is like to have an actual vested interest in either of these teams. I would be sitting on pins and needles. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night, to be quite honest. But I'll be sleeping good, and I'll be sleeping good tomorrow as well, before, after, during this game. It's going to be a good one, Reed. I certainly can't wait. And you are a lucky duck for getting to go into that stadium tomorrow. Should be a classic. All right, Reed, moving on to our next game. We're going to keep it here in the noon slot. Rutgers and Maryland. I think we can brush over this one quickly. I like Maryland here. I like what I saw from them last week. I think they keep it up. Maybe not quite to the level of playing with Ohio State. Maryland has this tendency to play to their competition a little bit. I am going to say we get Maryland 28, Rutgers 17.
I'm saying Maryland 24, Rutgers 10.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be a ton of a game. I think Rutgers could score some garbage time stuff and make it a little bit closer late. So, yeah, that's my thought there. Reed, let's move on to our next game. All in the 3:30 slate. A lot of later games in the Big Ten. All the West stuff in the 3:30 slate and 1 4 o'clock game as well. 3:30, Illinois, Northwestern. It's the Land of Lincoln Trophy. It is the battle for the hat. I know Inside NU, which our good friend who was on the show last week, Gavin Dorsey, writes for the Northwestern SB Nation blog. They put out a story before this game every year where the only word that they use is hat, and it just says hat, 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 etc. It's great. It's always fun. Gavin actually got to write the hat story this year, so shout out to him. And hat, 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 hat. Take that as you will. I've got the Illini here. 31-10 is my pick.
I just looked this up. I never knew this was a thing. I love, in all caps, hat. Hat, 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 hat. I love that. That's a funny
They're so
little,
funny. They're so that, funny.
That's good. I love the variations in all capital letters, question marks, commas. That's a funny little tradition.
Gavin's great. He's the best.
And there's also a meme in here that says, sometimes the side chick ain't even a chick. It's the gorgeous and proud nation of Ireland.
That's right. That made its way
into the hat story.
The only country on earth where the Northwestern Wildcats have won a game this season, unless they change that on Saturday. Reed, do you think they change it?
I'm sorry, Inside NU and all the hat fanatics at Evanston. I don't think so. I got a line. I have 30-10.
I really wish they would, just because I think the hat memes are fun. But no.
Yeah, it's this story's cracking me up, man.
I wish I told you about this beforehand. So
this is amazing. No, I like finding out about this on air, and I like the little happy and sad faces as well.
Hat. I think I've said hat enough. I don't want to bug our viewers or listeners, but hat. All right, Reed. You say sad hat to Northwestern. I say sad hat to Northwestern. No hats are going to be happy in purple, in my opinion. I think all the happy hat wearers are going to be in orange and blue. Up in Evanston this weekend should be a game. I'm not going to call it a fun one. That's usually what I say, but I mean, it's the hat. It can only be so fun outside of the trophy, which is one of my favorite in the entire sport. I mean, come on, they're playing for a hat. How can you not love it? And how can you not? But another great trophy and an actually iconic trophy in the sport is also being battled for at 3:30. It's the Axe, Minnesota, Wisconsin at Camp Randall. Reed, not impressed by what I saw from Minnesota last week in that choke job against Iowa that Iowa really should have taken advantage of and then didn't. No Tanner Morgan again, I don't think. I haven't heard of either way, but the fact that Tanner Morgan, I haven't seen him confirmed for this, like, kind of leads me to believe he's not going to be playing. But even if Tanner Morgan plays, that Minnesota passing attack has just been so terrible over the last few weeks. And as unimpressed as I have been with Wisconsin this season, and certainly as unimpressed as I was with Wisconsin last week in a 15-14 squeaker against Nebraska, a Nebraska team that just beat Iowa. I certainly think, though, that at home, the way Wisconsin's playing right now, they should be able to take care of this one, I think, compared to the way Minnesota's playing. I'm not impressed by either of these teams. I think this could go either way in the worst way possible. I think this is going to be an ugly game. I feel like Wisconsin should win it because they're at home. I don't know, but I look at it, coach, quarterback, home field advantage. Wisconsin gets the home field point. Neither team, I particularly like their quarterback, but I will take Graham Mertz over Athan or over Tanner Morgan right now. And coach, I think, is a toss-up. I'm going to take Wisconsin here. 17-14, I think the Badgers get the Axe this time around.
Yeah, this is one. It's kind of peak Big Ten West. I feel like we say that twice a week, every week. But I think if you can just find any reason, any singular reason to pick one team over the other, you roll with it. Wisconsin's the home team, so let's go roll with the Badgers. In addition to the fact that preseason, when I thought Minnesota was going to be the best thing since sliced bread, I said even still, they will lose to a subpar Wisconsin team because that's what they do. And Minnesota is not one to have success over its rival. And I think that trend kind of stays the same. I think Wisconsin absolutely rules this rivalry, and they absolutely have in recent years. I think they continue to this season. Give me the Badgers, and my score prediction is 17-13.
Yeah, I think this should be a low-scoring one. Both teams like to run the football, almost to the basketball. You can tell where my head is based off of the team that I spend most of my time watching. And we'll get to them, believe me. But yeah, I think this should be a tight one, low scoring. But the Axe is always fun, and it is really one of the best trophies and best rivalries in this whole sport. It's historic. It's classic. Minnesota and Wisconsin doesn't get much better than that. Speaking of my team, the Indiana Hoosiers are playing host tomorrow to the Purdue Boilermakers. It's the battle for the old Oaken bucket. another great trophy in this sport, a bucket that Lee Corso once slept with, a bucket that the great former Indiana quarterback Xander Diamant once smoked a cigar with. It's an iconic trophy, in my opinion. It's a fun game. Every year, it's always tight. I say that going into it every time. The two constants for every old oaken bucket, in my opinion, are this. The weather's going to be awful, and the game is going to be tight. Last year, the game wasn't tight. The weather was awful. This year around, the weather's actually going to be pretty nice. The game, I do think, is going to be tight, though. I love what we saw from Indiana last week. I love the option stuff. I loved Dexter Williams. I think the Hoosiers, Reed, call me crazy, not only have a really good chance here, and I think 10 is a crazy spread, but I think the Hoosiers are going to win this game. I've just got a weird feeling, Reed, and sometimes you can't fight that. This new option offense that IU showed off last week against Michigan State really impressed me. They're not going to complete more than like 5-10 passes, but they're going to run it really well. They're going to do some zone blocking stuff. They're going to utilize option plays. Dexter Williams is going to get up and down the field. And I like when you get Jalen Lucas in space too. It's a little bit of me loving what I saw from Indiana's offense last week. And I think doing something that they should have really tried a long time ago, now that we've seen it work against a decent Michigan State team. But Reed, Purdue's looked really terrible in recent games. They've been in poor form, and I think Indiana capitalizes on this. This is going to sound crazy. I've got the Indiana Hoosiers winning back the old Oaken Bucket 27-24.
You know, I love that pick, and I almost want to go with it. And I was going to go with it up until about 15 seconds ago. I'm not going to do it. And the reason I say that is because you
saying you have a good feeling about Indiana football, because anytime that happens, it's over. It's like Drake supporting a team. You know, I'm sorry, Indiana. It's not happening. You're not winning the game. If Patrick Phelps thinks you're going. So is I'm flipping my score prediction. I'm going.
Am I a curse?
At least this season, you are. Anytime you have legitimate reason to feel good, or think you have legitimate reason to feel good about.
I picked them week one and they won. I picked them.
Oh, but that's we'll call that a sham.
I don't think I picked them. Idaho, Western Kentucky. What else do I pick them? I think I might have picked them against
Cincinnati, Rutgers. Nebraska.
I them against Cincinnati in Nebraska.
Definitely Cincinnati.
Okay, I did pick them against Cincinnati for a fact. Yes. Maybe I picked them.
That's
more
really
often,
the one that solidifies it, the Cincinnati one. But I'm flipping my pick from 24-20
more
Indiana.
More competitive than you think.
I'm saying 24-20 Purdue now. Purdue gets the, you know, they finally get the bid to go to Indianapolis. They get a great home crowd at the Big Ten Championship and everything.
A great
and
home then, crowd of 60% Ohio State fans.
And then we all, you know, then they forget what happens after once the ball's kicked off, and they're just happy in that moment.
Yeah,
Purdue that's... going to the Big Ten title game. The story ends once the teams run out of the tunnel.
Illinois going to the Big Ten title game. That means I think either of those teams going to a Big Ten title game still is a story in and of itself.
Oh, absolutely. You think those guys in July when they were in that stadium with you and me thought they were going to be there in December?
Purdue, yes. We talked about it.
Well, really, that's actually true.
Purdue had a shot. Purdue, I think this Purdue is almost totally – I don't want to say it was likely, because, boy, oh, boy, has the road been unlikely. It's been about as weird of a path as you could imagine. But I will say that Purdue, coming into the season, I thought had a real shot to get here. Illinois wouldn't have in a million years guessed that final week of the season they'd be playing for a shot at the Big Ten title game, unless it was like six teams have to lose and one team has to – lose in overtime or something crazy, and they have to win on point differential or something. That would have been my only way of seeing them get in. It would have to be like absolutely absurd. But here they are with a real shot. They need a win and a loss by Purdue. I'm predicting it. Reed's not. We differ there. I'll be there, though. I'm excited for it. I think this is a real chance for Indiana to go into the offseason with some momentum, because, boy, oh, boy, did they not have it until last week. And now it feels like they've got it a little bit. So, Should be interesting to see what Tom Allen's bunch can get done this Saturday at The Rock. Reed, last game here, 4 o'clock kick. It's on FS1. It's Michigan State at Penn State in Happy Valley. Spartans looking to get to bowl eligibility. They're 5-6 right now after the double overtime loss to IU in the Spitter last week. Reed, I don't see them getting to bowl eligibility. I think the Sparty season ends right here.
I agree. I also, I want to say this before I give my score prediction. I have real quickly whipped up a list of my top 5 favorite Big Ten trophies because it is rivalry week.
Oh, like we should have coordinated this beforehand. Hit me.
I think I'm going to give those in a minute. I want to give you time before I talk about this and then while I'm giving my list for you to think of your own if you feel like doing that. If you want to peruse through the list of Big Ten trophies that there are. So I'm just giving you that advance notice. In this game, I really think Michigan State makes this a contest. I think despite playing terribly last week, I think the fact that Michigan State came alive against Illinois when necessary makes me believe in a dogfight for bowl eligibility against the Penn State team that has something to play for, but not really, because I think as much as a 10-2 Penn State with losses to Michigan and Ohio State absolutely deserves a New Year's Six game, I could totally see them getting screwed out of it and going to the Citrus. You know, there's not a whole lot on the line for Penn State here. There's much more on the line for Michigan State, and I think Penn State's a great team and they've been hitting their stride. I think Michigan State makes this a really good contest. With that being said, I think Penn State comes away with a win. I'm saying 31-24 Nittany Lions, but watch for it to be a game.
I like that pick, Reed. I think that's interesting. Michigan State backs against the wall, fighting for their lives. We see this in soccer all the time with the relegation scrap. The team really who needs a point or a goal differential, something to stay above, really gives it everything they've got. They play for their lives. They play like they ain't going to play tomorrow, because really you're not. It's do or die. It's put up or shut up in the truest sense of the words. I like the way you're leaning there, Reed. I don't think Michigan State's got the horses to get it done, but damn it, I think they make it a game. I've got Penn State winning this 28-24. I think Michigan State makes the game late, and I don't think this is a great Michigan State team, obviously. It's a team I didn't like preseason. It's a team I didn't like during the season. It's a team that I think is going to finish 5-7. But it's a team still with its back against the wall, and frankly, I think that's the most type of dangerous team in this sport.
Yeah, I agree. I love that soccer cup comparison. Excuse me. This kind of is like if we're looking at the Prem, the number 18 team, you know, first in the relegation spots, fighting against the team that's got a bid to the, you know, Europa League or something.
This is like Everton last year.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is there's
Everton's
there's not
a good
much
comp too, because traditionally they're pretty good.
That's true. Yeah, and Everton's never been relegated. So Michigan mm-hmm. State, a team that, yeah, traditionally pretty decent, you know, never, they're never Manchester United. They're never Liverpool going out. They actually, they're very similar to Everton, because also their biggest rival, Liverpool, has a rival that they care about more than them.
Yes.
There you go, you soccer/Big Ten heads. There's your soccer for today.
But there's also a part of me that's like, I don't know, they made a playoff once. Who's like that unlikely Champions League team?
I mean, Leicester after winning the league, I guess.
Yeah.
Michigan State did win the league, make a Champions League once, I think. Leeds, probably way back. I know Nottingham Forest won it back when it was the Cup Winners' Cup a long time ago. Uh-huh. But
whatever. This isn't the first in soccer. Happy World Cup week.
Yes, absolutely. Happy World Cup week. And it's honestly kind of weird with the World Cup happening. It doesn't feel quite like an Ohio State-Michigan week because I've been entertained all week. Usually it's been I've had to entertain myself with highlights of past games, and I haven't really gotten the chance to do much of that because it's been World Cup entertainment. And then once World Cup's over, now football's on, halfway through the day. So fascinating. But anyway, before we wrap up the show, in the spirit of rivalry week and in the spirit of rivalries and in what we love in the Big Ten, I would say has the best trophies in the land when it comes to rivalries. Here are my top 5 rivalry trophies. Some of them aren't really rivalries, but here are my top 5 Big Ten trophies. At number 5, I'm saying this is one that's being competed for this week, the Paul Bunyan's axe. I love this trophy. The thing I love the most about it is the fact that one side has Wisconsin colors painted on, the other has Minnesota. I think that's a fun little touch. And, I don't love, as far as trophies go, it's kind of weirdly shaped and it's not, you know,
quite a traditional trophy, but I love it. Great one. Number four, another one being fought for this week, the old Oaken Bucket. Really a brilliant trophy, and I love the little letters that dangle off of it. Terrific. Number three, the little brown jug. This is one really epitomizes a Big Ten trophy, and another one that's got the logos of both teams on it. I love me some little brown jug, and it's a game that's not really played that often, but I think it's a fun little game, and it's a fun little trophy. Who doesn't love a little brown jug? Number two, the third and final trophy on my list that's being fought for this weekend. We sat here and talked about it for a while. Hat. The Land of Lincoln Trophy. This is just amazing. I love a trophy that's, you know, it has significance to the land in which it's played. And it's just a fun little looking trophy. It's a hat. I mean, that's great. You're playing for a hat. What are we doing here? I love it. Number one, I believe I spoke about this earlier when this game was played, the Paul Bunyan Trophy, the Michigan State Trophy. And, you know, really, I love some of the trophies Michigan competes for. This one's great. And, you know, the best part of it is that the winning team gets to put their own helmet on top of little Paul Bunyan. I think that's a fun, awesome little touch. And it's a great way of, you know, even more so as much as Wisconsin can hold it up to the crowd with the Wisconsin colors facing them. That's cool. It's even cooler when you can hold up the crowd or the trophy to the crowd with the trophy wearing your team's helmet. That's really fun. So Paul Bunyan Trophy gets my number one. And then honorable mentions and why they didn't make the list. Governor's Victory Bell. That one, you know, it's cool, but it's just way too big. It's impractical. That's Penn State, Minnesota, for those wondering. And the Purdue, such a weird cannon, one too. Purdue and Illinois. I think it's kind of stupid that a trophy is called the Purdue Cannon when it's, you know, when one team is called Purdue. I don't like that. For naming purposes, it's off the list. And of course, the worst trophy in the Big Ten, the one I can't stand, the Land-Grant Trophy between Michigan State and Penn State being played for this weekend. What a dumb trophy. It's beyond impractical, and it just looks hideous.
Beyond impractical. Great way of putting it. Hilarious trophy, really. All things considered. But yes, Reed, I love this list. Incredible. What more could you ask for? It's just the most Big Ten thing ever. A top five trophies list, Reed. What a way to
We had to give it to the people.
You gave the people what they
want.
This
is the content the Big Ten people search.
We love it. We're so here for it. And what a better way, name a better way to cap off our show. I certainly can't think of one. Reed, anything else from you before we wrap this one up?
I don't know.
How about one out-of-conference pick?
Yeah, we never did out-of-conference picks. Let's do Tennessee Vandy for fun.
Yeah,
give me Vandy.
Okay. Yeah, Doors. 21-20 Doors.
To get bowl eligibility. This will actually be my take out-of-conference.
Doors by a point. Let's go.
Here's my take. Either one of two things will happen. Not both, but one of two. Either Vanderbilt will beat Tennessee, or get ready for this. Make sure you're sitting down to hear this one.
I'm sitting.
Georgia Tech will beat Georgia. One of those two will happen.
Oh, Reed.
Going up against big teams. One of the two will prevail. I'm just feeling it. It's going to be a crazy week. Georgia all year has been, not all year, but at various points in the season, has slipped up against lesser opposition. Georgia Tech's on a roll right now, and they have everything to play for. Georgia really doesn't have much to play for. The big game is next week. Georgia Tech potentially has some things going their way there, and then Vandy, kind of similar situation. Tennessee, except, you know, the wheels are starting to roll off. Hendon Hooker might not or will not be playing.
Yes.
They're fighting for bowl eligibility.
Terrible situation there with him. Feel awful, but
it is, yeah. Yes. And I don't mean to sound, you know,
No. You're not.
You know, misery.
Right.
I've
got a feeling about Vanderbilt too, Reed. And Reed's not just saying this because his brother goes to Georgia Tech and Reed grew up in the shadows of Vanderbilt Stadium, but
I kind of am saying it for that reason. But
he totally is saying it just because of these two things. Reed, I'm feeling it too. Give me Vandy by a point. 21-20.
Yes. Absolutely, Vandy.
I'll do
it.
Go Doors. Anything else from you today, Reed, before we wrap things up?
Nothing for me. It's gonna be an exciting day tomorrow. You know, have your TVs tuned to Fox at noon because you're not going to want to miss this one.
Certainly not, Reed. And that'll do it for our episode this week. Thank you all for listening. As always, have yourself a great college football Saturday, and we'll see you next time. Take care.